Back with you for another week of new shows Monday, June 14th, 2021 on Connecticut Today. A lot of calls regarding marijuana and all the big stories. Also, though, we took time out to talk to a former speechwriter for former President Bill Clinton, Jeff Shessel. His new book outlines the space race way back in the early 60s from the view that it was actually part of the Cold War. He is an author, and he's a former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton. He has written Supreme Power and Mutual Contempt. His latest effort on the writing side is Mercury Rising, John Glenn, John Kennedy, and the New Battleground of the Cold War. And me being the self-confessed space geek that I am, I said, yes, 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 I'm going to speak to Jeff Shessel, who joins us. Jeff, Paul here in Bridgeport, Connecticut. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
When I saw this, I had to have you. Before we get to the book, the other fascinating thing, former speechwriter for President Bill Clinton. Give us a little wrap-up, maybe a minute or two, on what that job is like, Jeff, and how was it for Mr. Clinton?
Well, it was a great, great experience, as you might expect. I mean, it's an exciting job, I think, in any case, for just about any president, but particularly for a president who cares a lot about speeches and delivers them very well. Whether or not anything I gave him was well written, I knew he was going to hit it out of the park. But because he could give such a fantastic extemporaneous speech, everybody knows that about Bill Clinton, he really forced you to raise your game as a speechwriter. You really had to give him something good if he was going to go ahead and read it. So it was a great first job in speechwriting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's right up there with the best communicators ever in the White House. The book, though, Mercury Rising, man, this is fascinating. Let me take it from the beginning and to the level of somebody who may not know what you and I know about this, Jeff. I've read so many volumes about this, but yes, more and more, Jeff, as we look into the space program and the early parts of the program and the failures before John Glenn finally orbited, this was almost a daily scoreboard thing of us versus the Soviets, wasn't it?
It was, and we were losing. I mean, unless you were looking at meteorological satellites, mm-hmm, in the late 1950s and early 60s, we were losing the space race from the very first moment in 1957 when the Soviets sent the first satellite into orbit, Sputnik. And we were still losing in 1961 when they sent the first human being into orbit, Yuri Gagarin. And it wasn't just about, of course, points on a scoreboard. It was not just about bragging rights. This was understood as an existential struggle between the United States and the Soviet Union, between freedom and totalitarianism. And it was really not clear to everyone in the United States or across the free world that we would ultimately prevail. There was the sense that the Soviets were so far ahead that we might never catch up. And who knew what the Soviets were going to do in space if there was no true competition up there.
And that's inconceivable today, Jeff. And if people go back and look at the media coverage, I mean, as you and I well know from researching this and you from writing it, the minute Sputnik started to transmit, it was like, oh, here come the space-based Russian nukes that are going to bring us to our knees.
Absolutely. You know, the United States had always said that our purposes in space were peaceful. The Space Act that created NASA in 1958 said that, you know, we were going to explore space for all mankind. Well, the Soviets said similar things, but nobody believed them. And they said it with sort of a wink. And then in the next breath, they would talk about the possibility of arming their space capsules. And so it did not seem that far-fetched to talk about a Soviet space station that would be armed with nuclear missiles. There was a lot of concern about that. Defense experts even talked about the possibility of a Soviet nuclear base on the moon that would lie outside the reach of U.S. defenses. It sounds absolutely fanciful to us today, but the Soviets had achieved so many firsts in space so quickly that it really seemed to many Americans that they could do essentially whatever they wanted in space, and that they would, in fact, do so.
Jeff, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Got to do a quick check of traffic and weather together. Jeff Sessel is the guest, former White House speechwriter, and one of his books, the newest one, Mercury Rising, John Glenn, John Kennedy, and the New Battleground of the Cold War. Back after traffic and weather together on WICC. All right, the guest is Jeff Sessel, a former White House speechwriter under Bill Clinton. His latest book, Mercury Rising, John Glenn, John Kennedy, and the New Battleground of the Cold War. A lot of people say, hey, America, always number one in space. Well, as Jeff said earlier, and if you research it, folks, and of course, buy the book wherever you get it, at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and all that. The Russians had beaten us significantly early on, and then there was the declaration by John Kennedy that we're going to go to the moon, Jeff, which a lot of scientists said, you got to be kidding me, too. But I don't think, Jeff, a lot of people understand the role that Lyndon Johnson played in all this and his powerful role in Congress in really keeping the wheels running on this.
Absolutely. Lyndon Johnson was way ahead of John Kennedy when it came to space exploration. In fact, he was way ahead of just about everybody. From the very moment that the Soviets sent Sputnik into space in October of 1957, Lyndon Johnson jumped right out to try to lead the national conversation on space and to demand answers from the Eisenhower administration about why we were behind. Later that fall, Johnson launched 2-3 months of hearings on Capitol Hill where he hauled all these experts in front of him, generals and admirals and defense experts, to ask these questions about why we were behind and how we could possibly catch up. And so when he became John Kennedy's vice president and they took office in the beginning of 1961, it was natural and it was expected that JFK would appoint Lyndon Johnson as his point person in the White House on space. And he did exactly that. So when the Soviets achieved this incredible first, the most important of all, which was to send the first human being into space in April of 1961, JFK turned to LBJ and said, find me a solution. He wrote LBJ a memo and he said, what is an area in space where there are dramatic results where we can win? That's how Kennedy put it.
And then, of course, he made the famous speech, you know, in the blazing heat, talking about, why does rice play Texas? But beyond that, outlining America's space goals. John Glenn, dignified man, served in Congress for years. But first, Jeff, as you outlined in the book, he was a hero. He was part of the original Mercury 7. At least, Jeff, 6 of the 7 like to drink a lot. They womanized. They enjoyed their celebrity. But the impression I've always gotten is, Jeff, that John Glenn was picked for a purpose, wasn't he?
He was, and he was picked for a lot of purposes, actually. I mean, it was clear during the application process, during the selection process, that he was a standout, not only in terms of his performance, but also in terms of his facility in front of the cameras. John Glenn was already famous. He had won fame as a test pilot, setting a speed record, flying a jet across the United States back in 57. And he was a straight arrow, but he was not a stick in the mud. He was enormously appealing. He had a megawatt smile. He was adored by the American public. And Glenn was really miles ahead of the other astronauts in understanding the importance of public relations when it came to the program, that the program was by no means assured of success, as we've been discussing, and it had to compete for taxpayer dollars in Congress, and it also had to win the hearts and minds of the public and in the United States and across the free world. And Glenn really had a whole set of abilities, not just as a pilot, but as a public figure that helped NASA in all these regards.
Sure, and as great as all the Mercury 7 were, Jeff, the other 6 were great pilots, technical wizards, but the other 6 kind of all had that little bit of a jerk in them, which is okay because they were going to strap themselves in a can, and people should realize how small that Mercury capsule was. It's amazing, like you and I have seen it in person. But yeah, Glenn was kind of this white Anglo-Saxon Saxon, Protestant, all-American boy, the kind of guy that you wouldn't mind your daughter going out on a date with.
Well, that's right. I mean, Glenn in that time represented what many kind of middle Americans, particularly middle-class white Americans, wanted to see in their fellow Americans. He represented all of the old traditional values of faith and family. He came from a tiny little town in the middle of Ohio. And yet, at the same time, he wasn't a figure of the past. He was speeding toward the future. He was a guy in one of those silver spacesuits, and he was one of the best seven pilots that NASA was able to identify in the United States.
Jeff Sechel is the guest. The name of the book, Mercury Rising, John Glenn, John Kennedy, and the New Battleground of the Cold War. And, of course, Jeff, in the interest of time, we all know what happened. John Glenn made his successful flight. There was some worries during that flight. It turned out to be some bad sensors and bad lights. We'll let people read the book to come up with that. But, boy, there must have been just an incredible, even though we had, come in, quote-unquote, in second place to the Soviets, there was an incredible exhale, wasn't there, among the White House, among Congress, when we finally at least matched them after a few weeks?
There was an incredible release of emotion in the country. There was a lot of pent-up worry about Glenn. His flight had been delayed 10 times. It had been postponed, scrubbed 10 times over 4 months, and it just created a greater and greater sense of worry in the country. And there was a sense now with Glenn's success that America was finally truly in the space race. Up to that point, there had been profound doubt whether we could actually compete with the Soviet Union. Now it seemed that we could. There was no guarantee that we were going to win, but it was clear that we were in the race.
And finally, Jeff, I love the little points in the development up to the Glenn flight and even in it where they took little jabs at the Soviets and Glenn going out of the way saying, okay, I'm turning the capsule now, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Because as we found out in later years, Jeff, Yuri Gagarin, God bless him, it was an amazing thing what he did, but he had no control over his Russian capsule. He was, in a sense, just a piece of cargo.
Absolutely. The Soviet capsule was completely automated. They gave the cosmonauts no role, really, no ability to do much of anything or anything, really. And the American astronauts felt very constrained by NASA. They wanted to do a lot more than they were allowed to do, but they were certainly allowed to do more than their Soviet counterparts.
Yeah. And Jeff, finally, you mentioned it earlier. What if we had lagged behind the Soviets? There's a series on Apple TV Plus for all mankind that maps out what it might have been like if, in fact, the Russians got to the moon first and the ripples that might have caused. And I would imagine even in the early parts of the program, as you say, the chances of that, even though it would take years to happen, was a real worry.
It was a very real worry. I mean, it was an uphill struggle. It was an enormously uphill struggle for the United States, first to catch up and then ultimately to surpass the Soviets. And again, this was not just about winning a race. This is not the outer space Olympics. This was seen as an existential struggle between two nuclear powers. And as John Kennedy said in 1960, when he was running for president, if the Soviets control space, they can control Earth. Those were the stakes as people understood them at the time.
Folks, go out, pick it up, no matter if you've read about it before or if you lived through it. It's always good to get more sources. Mercury Rising, John Glenn, John Kennedy, and the New Battleground of the Cold War. Jeff Sechel has been the guest. Jeff, thank you. We appreciate it, and good luck, and hopefully we can talk down the road. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. There you go. All right, folks. Jeff Sechel is the author. S-H-E-S-O-L. Jeff Sechel is the author there. Once again, Mercury Rising, John Glenn, John Kennedy, and the New Battleground of the Cold War.